Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Gobeski Wallace Report. My name is Adam Gobeski.
And I'm Charlie Wallace. Today we've got three forever guests with us. They've come to their forever home. We've got Paul Wilcox.
Thanks for having me.
Doug Gobeski.
Great to be here.
And Kevin Vredevoog.
Hello.
And we're here to discuss, I can't believe I'm about to say this, the 80th installment of the Merry Marvel Movie March.
Wow, yeah.
Wow. And that is the 2022 film Black Panther Wakanda Forever. But before we get to that, Doug is going to spend 45 seconds and no longer discussing his chocolate report.
Okay, so it's time for the Gobeski Chocolates Report. I've got the new Snickers pecan, which is basically a Snickers, but they replaced the peanuts with pecans. So let's give it a try.
What color is the packaging?
It's kind of like orangish brown.
Okay.
This is disturbingly
good. I mean, I assume you're eating a turtle with nougat.
Well, yeah, except the thing, the part that's really disturbing is that it's too soft. Like the chocolate is like too soft.
No. Even. Did it sit around? Was it in the fridge?
Was it in your pocket?
Or, yeah.
Did you cup it in your hands for a while?
Maybe.
Other than the softness, how is it?
It's pretty good. I think they hit a really good ratio between the caramel, the nuts, and the nougat here. The second bite was a little bit better. That is a would buy again. I would recommend this.
Better or worse than the almond?
The almond is just kind of lackluster and too hard. This is definitely better because it's basically a Snickers, but with a different nut. Fundamentally, it's like a Snickers.
I do need to know the pecan size, though, before we're done.
Oh, they appear to be chopped.
Oh, pretty finely chopped. Okay. Yeah. Maybe about down to peanut size.
Mm-hmm.
All right. That is your time. Thank you, Doug. And now it is time to resume discussing the movie Black Panther Wakanda Forever, which is the story of one Dennis Black Panther, who is next in line for the pension. And they only say it once because it never comes up in the movie again. But he decides to open an Afrofuturist clothing fashion store called Wakanda Forever in a mall. And it turns out that his store is built right on top of an abandoned but still prosperous silver mine, non-exhausted. So people are trying to get into his basement to mine silver, and he has to fend them off. It's a revenge comedy.
I like that this movie actually does have to do with, you know, precious metals and deaths and successions and things. It fits a little bit better than most of the recaps you do.
Whoa, 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 whoa. You don't like my recaps?
I love them. I'm just saying.
Not for their accuracy, though.
Like to hear you do better, Charlie.
All right. Black Panther Wakanda Forever is the story of Wakanda reeling from the... Oh, Den. Oh, you want one of these? Okay.
I'm just derailing you.
Okay. Black Panther Wakanda Forever is the story of Wakanda reeling from the death of King T'Challa, who was played by Chadwick Boseman, but had passed away since Avengers Endgame, which I guess was his last appearance. So this ends up being the story of his sister, Shuri, who ends up ascending the throne when her mother dies at the hands of Namor, a sea god, who attacks, well, god in quotes, who attacks Wakanda in order to keep other people from attacking him and his people.
You're out of senses.
Technically, you didn't tell him he had to restrict himself to three. You just told him you'd like to see him do a better job.
Yeah, you're right. I guess that's fine.
We're just going by convention.
Had anybody seen this movie before? How about you, Adam?
Yes, I saw it in theaters. And then I got the Blu-ray in the Best Buy fire sale at the end of last year, where they were selling off all their physical media for very low prices. Although I didn't actually watch that copy until yesterday. But you'll be pleased to know that it worked. There's no worry about me having missed the return window.
Okay.
I know that was your deep concern.
I had not seen the movie before. I know that I'd considered seeing it in the theater because I'd liked seeing the original Black Panther in the theater, but didn't get to it for whatever reason. Here we are.
Yep, I also had not seen it before. This was the first time.
Yeah, I missed this one in the theaters as well. Basically got to a point where I was just like, I don't feel good going to the theater, and none of these movies are truly compelling to me. There wasn't like anything where I just had to see new Black Panther movie because, you know, of who the villain was, which I'm not sure I even knew who the villain was until I watched it.
Can I ask how you watched it this time around?
This time I watched it for the first time yesterday via Google Play.
So Disney can't kill you.
Legally.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Disney can do anything they want.
And Kevin.
I had seen it before. I saw it in theaters, I don't remember, a few weeks after it came out, probably. I remember it was a pretty low attendance theatrical viewing. And then not again until the rewatch for this.
So, yeah, Black Panther, Wakanda Forever. Background time. As Charlie mentioned, Chadwick Boseman tragically passed away between Endgame and this. His last performance as T'Challa is actually the Marvel TV show What If, where he does voice work as T'Challa.
Oh, yes, yeah.
Versions of T'Challa, I guess. Chadwick Boseman died of colon cancer, but he had kept this a secret from just about everyone, including Ryan Coogler. So Ryan Coogler had been working on a draft with Boseman and others about whatever the story would be next, and then Boseman tragically passed away. And so they had to obviously rejig that. It doesn't sound like there was ever any real serious contemplation of recasting. I think that was more or less immediately just off the table. So they had to decide like what did they want to do with this movie, because obviously the first Black Panther made $1 billion, so they can't not make a second one. That's how capitalism works, people. So it sounds like Namor was actually in the story fairly early on. So they kind of took that and then they added in. Basically, the grieving process became part of the movie, as those who have seen the movie, no doubt, know. So let's talk about Namor, or Namor, as he calls himself, and then everyone else doesn't respect his pronunciation as a name.
Definitely going to mention that.
Which was, yeah, a little weird.
Oh, it's like Deutschland in Germany, you know?
Yeah, I guess if you were like, where are you from? Oh, Germany. Oh, Germani? All right. But Namor, which I believe is the way it is traditionally pronounced among comic book fans, is actually one of Marvel's first characters at all, and one of their first superheroes. He makes his first appearance in 1939, I believe, in Marvel Comics number one. His first published appearance. He was in a promotional thing before that never got formally released. Namor's initially portrayed kind of as an anti-hero / villain, depending on who's writing and what's going on. He fights against the original Human Torch at various points. Once the U.S. enters the war, World War II, Namor's pretty firmly on the side of the U.S. against the Axis. So he hates humanity, but he hates Nazis more, I guess. After that, he makes a few appearances here and there, but largely is affected by the declining popularity of superheroes in general in the 1950s. So he doesn't really come back until 1960s when Stan Lee reintroduces him in an early issue of Fantastic Four, where he basically has amnesia and has to be reminded that he's Namor. Marvel calls him their first mutant by publication, if not by internal chronology. In the comics, he's the son of a human father and an Atlantean mother, because he is the ruler of Atlantis. And I believe that's supposed to be more or less the classical interpretation of Atlantis sunk beneath the waves, and his people adapt. But he has little wings on his ankles. He can fly. He's super strong, but he needs to be near water to maintain his strength, that kind of stuff. Stays more or less an anti-hero throughout most of his career. Again, ebbing and flowing as stories require. The other main character we should probably talk about is Riri Williams, who is also known as Ironheart. I actually don't have much firsthand experience with Ironheart because she's a fairly recent creation, like 2016.
Around Secret Empire, right?
Yeah, around 2016, I think. But my understanding is largely what we see here. She is a child prodigy, genius. She goes to MIT. She builds her own Iron Man suit, basically. I think in the comics, Iron Man hears about this and is suitably impressed and invites her to work with him at some point or something. Yeah. So, but that's also a real comic book character.
As are Atuma and Namora?
Yeah. So, yeah. Atuma and Namora are also Atlanteans. We see them. They're the Atuma's the one with the hammerhead skull on his head. And Namora's the main female Atlantean we see. I think that about covers it. Questions, comments, concerns? Okay.
Yeah, I think it addresses the main question I had, which was about Ironheart, who is not named such in this. So I just was just wondering whether she was from the comics.
No, not only is she from the comics, but she is getting her own Disney Plus series. I don't know if that was officially announced at the time. I kind of think it was. Kevin might know better than me on that.
I was going to guess yes, but I also don't remember when they announced the show or if it even has a release date anymore.
I think when I looked it up yesterday, it's sometime next year, 2025.
Okay.
All right, Trey, what do you want to talk about? Should we talk about the opening Marvel Studios tribute to Chadwick Boseman? I thought that was
really sweet. Oh, that was nice.
Where it was, instead of the usual various assorted MCU characters, it was all Black Panther. And like the script pages were T'Challa lines and stuff like that. I thought that was sweet.
Well, I don't know if going into this movie there was a question or not, there was any question about whether it was going to focus on the death of Chadwick Boseman / Black Panther, then it's answered right there in the first few moments of the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, like you said, I think you've got to do that. I don't know how you make a movie either like just completely forgetting about it or recasting it or not making it the central focus of it even. I think it's a good choice to do that.
Yeah.
With the time we've had now between, I mean, I don't remember when this movie was released, even though you probably just said it, and present day, do you think in retrospect they made the right choice by killing off the character because the actor died?
I think in this case, because T'Challa and Chadwick Boseman were so intertwined in the public consciousness, and given the more or less freshness of those two events, like Chadwick Boseman's death versus when this movie was coming out, I think, this probably is the right decision. Like, okay, if Chadwick Boseman had died in, let's say, 2012, and now it's 2022, it's 10 years later, okay, maybe then we can recast. But I think this close to his last appearance and stuff, like Charlie said, I don't think there's a better way to handle it than this.
No, you're right. The latter point, I think I'm more open to than the former. I mean, because I don't know. He did a wonderful job in this role, but it's not like he was, I don't know, someone who was a superhero from a long time. Christopher Reeve or something where the character was truly synonymous with him. I think if there'd been some other reason, he was alive, but for whatever reason, no longer wanted to do the movies, he was still replaceable, but I will accept that, for the cast and crew, the idea of replacing this guy who they all were familiar with and who worked on, creating the original movie with the director or what have you, that's fair.
I also think you may be understating just how big an impact Chadwick Boseman had in this role to the general public. Like, I think in many ways for him, he is the Black Panther the way you said Christopher Reeve is Superman.
I'm open to that line, but I guess, I don't know. I certainly loved him. I'm trying to think of the most tasteful way I can possibly phrase it. Like, he was in two-ish movies. Like, it's, I don't know. He was excellent.
Two-ish movies?
Yeah. Oh, I forgot about Civil
three-ish
War.
Three-ish movies.
Okay, we'll say three. Spread across however many years. Yeah, I don't know. Can I fast forward a lot in the movie to why it irked me a little bit?
Yeah, sure. Please.
Okay, so at the very, very end credit sequence, it is revealed that T'Challa had a son who is also named T'Challa. So it feels like they kind of wanted to have their cake and eat it too, where eventually this is the T'Challa. Like, no, guys, like, this is the comic book Black Panther. Like, that was just his dad. Don't worry about that. Like I it bugged me a little bit that they're trying to like redo it while also saying that T'Challa's dead. T'Challa is dead longer than T'Challa. This is a hot take.
No. Apparently. I mean, it is I know we are skipping right to the end. Yeah.
You're reminding me that I was going to look this up and I forgot to, which is basically why is he in this movie?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was a little confused at the end too. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's definitely a choice. And yeah, I don't want to read it as like a, oh no, you know, Black Panther will return as a different person at some point in the future.
Don't worry. It's
Teen Panther.
It's going to be a boy again. Nobody freak out. Don't freak.
Yeah.
Now, I will admit,
it's not just the Shuri Black Panther. Don't worry.
In my most cynical thinking, I know that the actress who plays Shuri, she had some problematic Twitter stuff, I think, related to COVID. So,
Charlie's going to tell us about
I thought someone had prepared. Yeah, so maybe they were building up. If they had to give her the boot, they'll just age this kid up and, hey, it's T'Challa again.
Wonder if it's in the first draft of the script. Yeah. So at some point during production, Letitia Wright retweeted a video of somebody, I think some pastor, who was saying some pretty silly things about COVID, and her quote on it was something along the lines of, this is very concerning if true, essentially, right? Once she got a lot of crap for that, she quit Twitter and half apologized for it. And then really hasn't addressed it much since. So yeah, they just kept moving on.
Wait, is that seriously it?
That's basically it. I mean, she's been asked about it. There wasn't anything
related to filming?
I don't think there was anything related to filming. I mean, they didn't stop production because of her. For that, they did because she got injured in one of the motorcycle scenes later. So there were several months that they were delayed. I think like 3 months. Because she got a bad concussion, which she was dealing with several. Yes.
Who am I supposed to cancel?
Right. She was. she was canceled on Twitter. That's about as good as you get.
I mean, she really.
Yeah, and then they canceled Twitter altogether.
You can do. Yeah. That's just a favor.
She learned her lesson, which is don't be on Twitter.
It looks like there was some reporting, which she disputed, that she was also sharing her views on the Black Panther 2 set.
Yeah, which it's not clear whether that's true or not.
Yeah.
Disney probably demanded that everyone toe the party line on that one, huh?
Well, not eventually, almost immediately. She's like, I don't want to talk about it anymore. I've said what I'm going to say. Which is probably the correct reaction if you want it to mostly go away.
She's like, the anti JK Rowling, basically.
Gina something, the one who is in The Mandalorian. Yeah.
It's just the alternate universe, Gina Carano.
Well, then I guess we'll have to wait for the next Mary Marvel Movie March episode to really dive into the anti COVID stuff. That's an Evangeline Lilly reference.
At the end of the story, Letitia Wright is still in this movie, and I don't think they're going to keep her from being in other movies necessarily because of it. So, but it was a big story at the time. I mean, it was during COVID, all capital letters.
That was a 3-month period, and that was it. I would like to point out that that is my comment just there is a reference to something someone said at my workplace. As long as we're talking about cast controversies, we should probably also briefly mention Tenoch Huerta, who plays Namor. There was briefly a controversy with him in which a woman accused him of abuse and being a sexual predator. However, I don't think anything ever came of that story. Like, there was no investigation. There was no police report. Anything like that. He denied it, said it wasn't true. And yeah, just thought I should mention it since maybe you heard something about that. But as far as I can tell, it never got followed up on. So
what I'm hearing here is that this movie was produced in a post-Me Too era.
Yes.
Okay.
But we'll talk more about that in our next episode, Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania. That's a Jonathan Majors reference.
Yes.
Ugh.
Everything old is new again. Oh, yeah. While I was looking stuff up, it sounds like the initial approach for Black Panther 2 was going to involve T'Challa learning about a son that he had that he didn't know about, but who was older because of the blip, because T'Challa obviously was blipped snapped out of existence by Thanos, but his child was not. So that may be why the kid is still in the movie, in the final version.
That makes me feel a little better.
I mean, they do the place setting earlier in the movie, but it really came off to me as awkward until that reveal. Like the, Shuri, I have something to tell you. Wait a second, the bad guy attacked us. Or why Lupita Nyong'o is like suddenly just went somewhere else and isn't there. I mean, they explain that just that she's in mourning or whatever, but it's kind of like, okay, interesting. But it all comes around.
All right, so that's the end of the movie. What about the bits before that? The 20 hours of movie before the end of the movie.
That is a point I was just about to make, so I'm glad you said that. For a movie that is like 2 hours, 45 minutes, whatever the heck it was, and I do enjoy this movie, and I don't even hate the parts that I'm about to talk about, you could have taken out absolutely every scene that had Everett Ross in it, and this movie would be completely on the change. Like, I don't even think you need to do much additional editing. You would just, like, excise those, and the movie would otherwise flow pretty much perfectly.
Yeah. I definitely was like, why is he and Julia Louis-Dreyfus, why are they in this movie? Is it contractual? Is that what's going on here?
If they were still under the creative committee, I would have said like, oh, somebody insisted they put white people in this movie.
So he's the token white guy.
Right.
It felt like they didn't really give him his quality of material to work with here as compared to Black Panther. Like, I agree with Kevin. Like, you really don't even need him at all. Just sort of an afterthought, almost.
I would guess it was primarily to remind us he still exists as a character and to continue to develop Val. I think this is the first movie she's been in.
Why do we need her? Like, who? She's just this weirdo from the end of Black Widow. Apparently she's head of the CIA now.
She's in what a is Disney going on? Plus Why? Series, and she's probably going to be in the Thunderbolts eventually. So they need to establish her as kind of a faintly sketchy Nick Fury type, I guess. I mean, that's really the only reason I can think of that they bothered to have those scenes and have Everett Ross. I mean, if they wanted to put him in the movie, just somehow make him part of the story more rather than giving him his own weird thing where every now and then he calls the main characters and has a discussion off screen, but assures us that he has had a conversation.
It would surprise me for Martin Freeman, but for Julie Louis-Dreyfus, I wonder if it's like she has a contract with them and like she has to be in a certain number of things. That's the only thing I could think of.
Sam Jackson contract or something?
Yeah. That would surprise me a little. Yeah.
Nine movies or something.
Exactly.
Like that. Something like that, yeah.
There was a big part of me that was really, you know, it felt for a second like maybe they were setting up a more complex ending battle in terms of getting the United States involved as well. I really was waiting for some kind of crazy thing to happen, or at least there being some tense like calling off the jets or drones or whatever scene, but yeah, nothing came of it at all, and I would agree with everything you guys have said.
Yeah, and then also, like, are they just trying to convince us that like the rest of the world is bad, which is kind of like, no, we can take that on faith, we believe that.
Yeah, I was like, they're just trying to add like a little bit of extra pressure that wasn't really needed, because you know, the main conflict itself was interesting enough.
Look,
yeah.
I think we're all on record as saying that Charlie's comments about Iron Man 2 are completely unfounded. But if he had made those comments about the Everett Ross plot line in this movie, I think we would all believe
him. One thing I think could have added some value to those, and I still think it would have been a largely separate plot line, was if the United States or UN or whatever nation you want it to be had a role in pitting these minority-led but technologically advanced and powerful nations against each other. Like, there could have been a statement they could have made on that front where these two powerhouses are so distracted fighting each other because of the United States intervention that, like, yeah, we are just the sh**s that we were kind of made out to be in this movie. But, yeah, we were just kind of laughing maniacally but doing absolutely nothing, we being again the United States, for the extent of the film.
It almost makes me wonder if there's a version of this movie where that happened and then Disney kind of sanded off.
Yeah, so they're like, you know what, maybe we shouldn't talk about proxy wars the MCU.
I think the closest we got, and I did like it, was when Val said something like, Everett Ross said something like, can you imagine, like, what we would be doing if we were the only nation on Earth that had vibranium? And she said something like, yeah, I dream of that every night. I mean, it was just a nice evil moment, though, again. Yeah. That was about as far as it got. It
doesn't go anywhere.
It was...
Yeah, no, I agree.
It was almost too evil. Like you're getting into, like, comic book villainy there. Like, obviously you need conflict to, you know, drive the story forward, but is it just me, or does almost all of the bad stuff and conflict in this plot derive from Namor being just kind of a bloodthirsty jerk?
That's pretty comic accurate, is my understanding. He's best categorized as sort of a dick, which comes through in his characterization here.
Huh.
Yeah. Okay. He's a little... I was about to say he's a little more headstrong here and unwilling to listen, but I actually don't think that's true, so I withdraw that statement. Yeah, there are plenty of comic book storylines where it happens because Namor's not listening to people, so never mind. I will say, one of the problems I had with this movie from I guess a meta standpoint, is that the minute they introduced Riri Williams as, like, the genius who could be killed, I was like, oh, well, that's Ironheart. She instantly has plot armor because Disney can't afford to just kill her off here. So I'm no longer that invested in if she lives or not, because obviously she lives. She has to go be in a whole TV show.
Not really in their defense, but I guess for what it's worth, I did like their... I don't know, backdoor piloting of Ironheart in this movie more than I liked their backdoor piloting of America Chavez in Doctor Strange. And I'm trying to think if there are any other backdoor pilots we've seen yet.
You just want to keep saying backdoor.
I love it so much. It felt more
step
naturally.
Step aside, backseat driver. It's time for backdoor pilot.
It felt like it melded well into the movie, and it didn't feel as overtly like, we're introducing this character, so we can do more stuff with this character going forward. I don't know. She just felt like a more natural fit for this story.
Honestly, I felt the opposite.
Interesting.
To me, she stuck out. I was like, okay, the minute you're like, she's in danger in this way, I don't believe you, basically. And maybe that's just because... Like I said, I'm pretty sure her show had been announced by this point. Whereas to date, I don't think America Chavez has a show that's been announced or a reappearance or anything. Acknowledging I haven't seen the Marvels, I don't know what happens in that. Maybe she's in that.
I'm going to split the difference between you two, which is that...
You hated both.
Yeah, I hate everything. No, it's that at the beginning, she just... I didn't know who she was, right? I didn't know that she was part of a TV series or that she was going to have any... powers whatsoever. So I was like, oh, we've got an audience surrogate again for these characters and situations we already know. It's like, we don't really need her, right? It's like they're really building her up for essentially just be this pawn. But then when she did come out with the they call it an Iron Man suit, Iron Heart suit, I was like, okay, now I buy into this. Like, I don't feel like she's extending the length of the movie like too much and still is kind of a cool character to have in there. So I warmed up to it.
Oh, I think she's fine as a character. I think I'm talking more purely from just like plot.
Yeah.
I've learned about this television show just now.
In real time.
And I thought, yeah, I generally thought the character was fine, but I also was like, it felt a little bit to me like, oh, they just kind of picked a random new person who is the, like, don't kill her person. And we didn't have that much time. I mean, I like, obviously she was cool, but I was also like, okay, are they that fast of friends that, I don't know, it just felt like they needed someone to be the stakes, you know, so, okay, it might as well be her.
She definitely played the role of a MacGuffin or whatever it would be in this context. But I even like the characterization just fit well into this movie. She's a brilliant African-American student who, you know, in the comics works on crazy advanced technology. That's a really good fit for a story about Wakanda, which, I mean, mirrors half of the ways I just described her. As opposed to someone who punches through the multiverse, hanging out with a bunch of wizards.
just to confirm, yeah, Ironheart was announced in December 2020. So, yes, this TV show had been announced at the time the movie came out. Which explains why I felt vaguely the same way about it in theaters as I did the second time watching. And I think maybe if they hadn't made so much of the movie about will she live or not, it might have gone over a little better for me, but because there are like so many moments where like her life's in danger, Namor's going to kill her or drown her or whatever. And I'm like, well, she's fine. So whereas if she'd been the catalyst, but not necessarily like constantly directly threatened, like face to face, almost, might have gone a little better for me.
Folks who had just seen this for the first time, I very much enjoyed this because I did not see it coming the first time I watched the movie. Did you guys like the Michael B. Jordan appearance?
Oh, yeah.
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 Oh, this was unfortunately spoiled for me while I was watching the movie because I had to look up if that was Trevor Noah doing the voice. So I was looking at the cast list and I saw Michael B. Jordan. I was like, oh, darn it.
I figured it was just like Carl wandering and going, have you gotten to the Michael B. Jordan scene yet? Let me know when you get to that part. I like that part.
I mean, it was a cameo, but it just felt so well placed in the movie. Like, it was the perfect reason to bring his character back, even though he was dead. I really enjoyed it.
And it made sense in terms of the story they were telling, yeah.
Absolutely. No, it's maybe the, I don't want to say the best cameo, but like the most purposeful, the best written in terms of plotting cameo that they've had in the MCU to this point.
Literally up until the moment that you see that it's Michael B. Jordan, I was assuming that it was going to be one of the Mesoamerican people. It was going to be like, oh, you used the wrong flower, so you get the different ancestors.
Were you ever concerned they were going to Rogue One Chadwick Boseman?
You mean like Thrawn?
Yeah.
No, it was Tarkin, right?
Tarkin. Oh, sorry. Grand Moff Tarkin.
And Leia.
Oh. No, that did not cross my mind, although maybe it should have.
I think it's probably a little too reverent a movie to do that, but.
Yeah.
They had already done a good job thus far.
I think that's just in my head because a recent Disney release has done something like that. I don't want to say any more and spoil anything for anyone, but
I assume you mean Mulan.
Again, you might think that. I couldn't possibly comment. So what did people think of the Namor storyline? Did it make sense for the movie for you? Did it not? Was it too much? Not enough in terms of like motivations and I don't know, just screen time.
I thought it was believable, but simplistic too, in a good way. It was like, all right, this is all you really need to explain that. It's like, he just really wants to protect his people because he's had experience with everyone outside. So there you go.
To be clear, that experience is primarily him murdering a bunch of people, right?
Seeing people enslaved, yes, and then him murdering them.
Does Namor actually mean no love? Like, what was that actually, I guess, I don't know, Spanish or?
I mean, in
like
that,
no Amor, I guess. It wouldn't be like nah.
Namor, yeah.
Yeah.
But that's not why Namor is named Namor.
No, in the comics, no. Yeah. It just, I don't know. It felt.
It could be some dialect or I don't know.
I liked his story overall. Just the, they called me Namor because this priest said I have no love. Like, I don't, if I was about to get murdered and just watched everyone around me get murdered, I don't know that I would personally reach for the words, you're a child of no love, or whatever the literal translation of what he was saying was. It just felt like they really wanted his name to be, you know, Namor.
Yeah, because we should probably note that we know we've kind of implicitly been saying it, but in the comics, or the Atlantis isn't Mesoamerican. So that's something of a change here in the movie. And so I think because of that, you get some other shifts, like the weird attempted back formation of his name, I guess.
So speaking of the comics, I do have a question about the blue-skinned Atlanteans. Correct me if I'm wrong here, because I might be, but isn't the reason why they're blue-skinned in the comics at one point revealed to be that they're like deviants, or they're like part deviant? Maybe they have deviant blood in them?
That's a great question. Let me look it up real quick.
Like, am I just misremembering the plot of Atlantis Attacks, maybe?
Why are some Atlanteans pink? Let's try that. Why are flamingos pink? Oh, thank you. More evidence for Atlantean descendants in the United States.
Yep.
Spectacular.
I'm sorry, what?
Yep, that was a worse. So as far as I can tell, skimming through the Marvel Wiki article on Homo Mermanus, most of them are blue, and maybe it's the mutants that are pink. I don't know if it's like a full Kree kind of thing, but there is some stuff here about deviants being involved, and I guess this is what you get when you're dealing with, at this point, what, 80 years of comic history?
So it's not like lobsters. Where you get like the rare blue one or whatever.
Yeah. I also thought it was interesting how when they're in the water, they don't seem to be blue.
Yeah, I was kind of confused over what color they even were.
Yeah.
Like maybe they're blue because they're retaining oxygen or something. I don't know.
It turns out that it's not just vibranium. It's actually significant amounts of silver mixed in.
Could be. It's impure vibranium.
Which is a fun joke, but nobody laughed at it. You know, because like if you intake too much colloidal silver, your skin will turn blue.
Oh yeah.
Don't say oh yeah, like you knew that.
Oh, I did. I just was not paying attention.
Thanks.
I would have given it a laugh, but I got distracted.
But I wasn't listening.
Looking up Avatar: The Way of Water.
Yeah, big Avatar vibes here. I kept thinking about that.
I was like, I gotta see that. We'll have to do that in the Avatar March.
Avatar March. Once all 17 movies are out.
We have to go to the theme park, too.
So I will admit, I do, in comic book terms, I like Namor as a character. Like, I find him fun and interesting. And I guess we haven't really talked about Shuri, even though this is basically her movie.
Yeah.
So how did you think that whole storyline was handled with her unwillingness to let go, I guess? Her feelings of frustration and, I don't know what you'd say, impotence? Like being unable to do something to fix it?
Well, I thought it was pretty effective. I didn't really have any problems with it. She had a good, you know, character arc throughout.
Did it keep you engaged?
Not necessarily all the time. It's like a long movie, and I'm kind of, you know, you don't want to be the movie person who's like, just get over it, but you're also like, okay, I understand, like, you know, what she's going through, but what's like the next thing or whatever.
Wait, you do understand? Because I need a little bit of help with this one. Like, it seemed to me like, okay, so her brother dies and she's not able to help him not die, and like, was I forgetting something else, or is that the entire reason for why she's got a chip on her shoulder?
That's why I took the simplest, most straightforward interpretation. That's what I was going with.
Oh.
Also, she's really put all of her faith in her ability to do like technology and her ability to do all that. And she doesn't believe in a lot of the same things that the rest of the Wakandans do. So when you get that, she just doesn't really have, much to anchor her at that point. She doesn't even believe that she goes to the ancestral plane or that happens. when people die.
Well, I don't know if it's that she doesn't believe she goes there. I think it's she doesn't. Before that happened, she doesn't necessarily believe in it.
That's true. And even then, does she believe that? Or is it just like, oh, something's going on with my brain at the time? Like, she's not willing to do the rituals and stuff or move on like everybody else is trying to.
I could have used a little more exposition on why at the beginning of, not the very beginning, like after, you know, the cut forward a year, why her, in her mind, failure led her to, I think she says, like, oh, I just want to burn the world down. Like, I didn't quite get, like, I needed those dots connected a little bit more. Being completely wrapped up in her work, like, absolutely being unwilling to fail in that way again. Like, I could see the sort of emotional response I could imagine myself or a person like her having to that. I didn't really get why she was in such an angry at the world place at the beginning. I don't know.
I guess I interpret it as just she hadn't given herself the time to grieve, and she was just holding on to that anger to an unhealthy degree, and she just wanted to lash out at everything and everyone.
I mean, honestly, as you say that out loud, no, that's a fair read. I think it would have been interesting, although, again, given the context in which this became the plot line, I don't know if they ever would have done this. You know, they reference that T'Challa, like, basically suffered silently and told no one about this until it was a little late in the game to be doing anything about it. It would have been interesting to me if some of that anger was directed at him, which I don't think there's any indication of whatsoever in the movie, but that would be a big unresolved feeling for her to work through, I could imagine.
Yeah, I could see that. Not where they go, I think, but...
No, not at all, no.
I could see that as a possibility, yeah.
And that would, I think, make the... not mid-credit sequence, but the last sequence before the credits start, where she is just sitting quietly with her thoughts and thinking about her brother and crying and moving on, all that much more powerful. And I love that scene to begin with. So, you know, that's saying something.
Charlie, your rebuttal?
Yeah, I do. My rebuttal. No. It's easy to forget that the queen dies too.
Right.
So that's what really throws her over the edge. I really kind of wanted to see, it doesn't make sense within the context of the movie to just have her be like over the edge for the rest of the movie. But I kind of wanted to see that, like, oh, maybe we could see like another movie with her just like directing the Wakandan army to do like horrible things because she's just lost it. But because I actually kind of liked that turn. But I was like, it doesn't make sense.
Movie is ever going to do that.
No.
Go full Daenerys or whatever.
It doesn't make sense thematically. Yeah. It doesn't make sense within Disney.
But there really wasn't much time. Like,
I mean, we don't have time to relitigate the Rey Star Wars problem, Charlie. So.
But I really like that scene at the end of the movie too, Kevin, which is why I was ambivalent, I guess is pretty generous, about the after credit scene.
Sure.
I was like, oh, I kind of wanted it to end right there. And they're like, oh, by the way, here's more.
I think they almost should have. I mean, they needed to introduce the kid at some point. But I guess if you just want to put that in the movie proper and then, you know, rearrange things such that she spends the time quietly and by the fire with herself at the very end. I mean, that's just, it was such a perfect way to cap off this movie that in a lot of ways was saying goodbye to Chadwick Boseman. Like, it's just, yeah, it would have been very good. I mean, was he replaceable? Yes, we've all said it, but wow. Oh. Sorry, just callback. Backdoor callback. It's a callback within a callback. That's a twofer.
I just assume this means that you watch movies for the plot, not for the characters. It's the only way that I can make that make sense.
I'll have to mull that over.
He's just mad that Terrence Howard wasn't Black Panther.
Yep, that's harboring resentment. Wow, Iron Man 1 or 2, I guess.
Really would have brought things full circle, actually.
It would have been bizarre.
I would love to see that conversation between Terrence Howard and Shuri, like, ugh, where he's like, no, my math. Like,
great performances, I think. Everybody. Yeah.
Talked about Angela Bassett, who I think got nominated for something or another for this.
Yeah, she got an Oscar nom for this. I which is this the first MCU acting nomination? I think it might be.
Well, that's true.
It might be. I mean, Robert Downey Jr. may have gotten a Golden Globe or a nom for Iron Man somewhere in there, but Emmy-wise, I think this might be the first. What If may have gotten a voice acting nom for actually Chadwick Boseman. Oh, I don't remember when that would have come out.
That is the first acting nom. I was questioning whether Black Panther 1 had gotten some, but it got a Best Picture nom, but no acting. Oh, Wakanda Forever won for costume design.
Yeah, not surprising.
Although I don't know, and maybe they're in the comics and I just haven't gotten that far in my Black Panther readings, but I don't know how I felt about the Iron Man Wakanda suits.
Yeah.
There was a little, I didn't enjoy it as much as I think I was supposed to.
Honestly, I loved, because, you know, we see those in action in the final battle sequence. I loved the Namor versus Shuri portions of that battle.
Yes.
The ship part with, you know, I don't know what you want to describe the aesthetics, but like almost stereotypical Japkin. I was going to say like the design of, what were they called? The Midnight Angels. And even the design of like the hyper, you know, advanced Ironheart. And yeah, the green screen, everyone's climbing up and they decided to have a battle in the middle of the ocean, because that's a great idea when you're fighting ocean-based people. none of it really worked for me outside of, again, the one-on-one battle that I wish they had spent more time on, frankly.
I would like to say that I watched the gag reel, and there's a shot where Winston Duke is on the side of the ship, and he says something like, "Who's that?" And then another character, I don't remember who, says, like, "They're the Midnight Angels." And he's like, "The what?" And she says, "The Midnight Angels." And he says, "Isn't it a little late in the movie to be introducing new characters?" But yeah, I think this movie is too long. And I think part of the reason it's too long, and this is going to sound weird, is it has too many fight sequences. Yeah. Or maybe the fight sequences go too long.
The underwater folks, what are we calling them? Not Atlanteans. I forget what their actual name is.
Oh, yeah.
Talokans, I guess?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So
Talokan?
I think one of their main problems is I don't understand, are they invulnerable? It appears not, except a couple of times where they are. Like, don't they get killed and then, like, does he whistle or something? And then they get up and run away and I'm like, what? Are they zombies?
Talokan Neil, apparently.
But then that never really comes up again. And like, you'd assume when they get stabbed that they're just done. I don't, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Why do they?
I watched this movie in two halves, and I remember being very confused by that in the first half, and then forgot by the time I watched the second. That is just completely unaddressed, unless they're fake dead to make... who's fighting them in that scene? Wait, Okoye?
They don't have Black Panther superpowers?
Is that what we're meant to...
I just assumed that was the case, that they all have Black Panther superpowers as a result of the blue plant.
Namor dropped a line somewhere in there that I think referenced that they were bare minimally above average strength, if not, you know, full on Steve Rogers super strength.
And it was also weird, the sound that was making everybody jump into the water. Like, it was interesting. And I usually don't like over explanation of how powers or abilities work, but that was just kind of like, oh, this is a thing we can do. Great.
I guess I was like, oh, this is a siren song thing. Okay.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, that's what I thought. And I was immediately kind of frustrated by it because like that would make more sense if they were Mediterranean rather than from Gulf of Mexico. Like, they've only been around for, like, what, 400 or 500 years? So why do they have siren abilities?
Yeah, and then where's that?
Just felt like there was something missing in the lore there, you know?
Where's the handing out earplugs scene?
That's like, just a general... yeah.
Like, it felt like it was something that, survived the editing process, so to speak, from an potential earlier edit where they actually were Mediterranean.
I would have loved to see a very stereotypically Italian Namor, but I don't know. I think the siren song thing works really effectively is that early sequence where they're on the oil rig or whatever. Like there, it's good and spooky. Like, you know, you got a bunch of people who are just throwing themselves to their deaths for absolutely no reason. As it got used and reused, or was it only one more time that they used it, or did it show up in the final battle? Okay,
like one grenade away.
Yeah,
battering anymore.
Look, yeah, that's somebody saying, hey, why don't they just reuse their siren powers here? We know they have them. And someone else saying, oh, yeah, you're right.
Are we just recreating the committee?
Yeah.
But yeah, I think I would have liked either restructuring this so you didn't have both the attack on Wakanda and the attack on the ship, or maybe just making them both shorter, or maybe making the focus of the ocean one more about just Namor and Shuri. I think trying to do it all is a little too much in a movie that already is doing a lot.
I think a bigger attack on Wakanda, because that sequence, if I remember correctly, I mean, it's not wildly long. I mean, make that the big, expensive, roughly end of the movie set piece, and then separately have that, you know, one-on-one battle, whatever, as kind of the emotional climax of the film.
Yeah. Yeah, because I definitely thought the attack on Wakanda was the more compelling action scene somehow.
I mean, I guess that's what motivates her to finally become Black Panther and all. But yeah, I feel like we could have written this a little more smoothly and compactly.
It almost feels like that final battle sequence, they had like, they were running low on money, so they were like, okay, how can we make this cheaper? We put them on a gray box in the middle of the blue ocean and like just people climb all over it. Like, compared to the cost of, I'm sure, every single shot of Wakanda, that must have been a bit of a cash saver.
I mean, I thought, you know, I mean, if they're in the ocean, that would have been the perfect opportunity to bring the U.S. military into the battle, too. But
oh my God.
The carrier just shows up that somehow no one saw.
They sort of forgot that the U.S. military was nearby.
Yeah, they're like, the president, he wants to attack, you know. Okay. We won't talk about this again, though, probably.
Winston Duke back as M'Baku.
He's a delight. Yeah, he's great. I like him.
Yep, agreed.
I think he even gets more to do here than he did in Black Panther, right? Maybe a little bit more screen time.
They gave him, you know, a weightier role, I would say. Screen time-wise, I don't know, proportionally, it might be a little bit more. But, you know, him actually having that conversation with Shuri after her mom died and seemingly setting him up to kind of be the leader, ruler, whatever, going forward. I liked his role in this movie quite a bit.
So one thing I wanted to mention that I forgot to mention earlier that I'm slightly surprised Kevin hasn't mentioned yet is that they use the M word in this movie.
Yeah. Did Miss Marvel come out before this? Or was this truly the first time in the MCU or any of the Disney Plus series that comes up?
Oh, good question. I guess I think Ms. Marvel's before this.
Okay.
Despite virtue of the fact this ends Phase 4. But yes, Namor's called a mutant here, which, as Kevin points out, is the second appearance of the word mutant in the MCU, but the first movie appearance, which I think for most people is therefore the first appearance.
Yep.
Things you liked about this movie we haven't talked about? Anything?
Soundtrack, of course.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yes.
I don't really have anything like insightful to say about it other than it was still fresh, you know, much like the Black Panther one. And like even just the score was really well done, I thought.
I watched with subtitles, so I got to know what all the songs that had names were.
Oh, nice.
Oh, for real? Awesome. Yeah.
I really liked Telecom. I could have spent Telecom? More time. Telecom? I know that. I don't think that's what I said. But.
So a quick look at the internet suggests that Tlalocan is the name of like a mystic Aztec city. Like, I think it might be like, it's where Tlaloc, the god, lives. A paradise ruled over by the rain deity Tlaloc and his consort. Oh no. Chalchiutitlcu.
I liked the big fake sun. I would have liked to have spent more time there just to kind of get a better idea of what like the day-to-day life is like in this. Like, we're starting to get to know Wakanda a little better. But yeah, I don't know. Just visually, it was neat.
Yeah, agreed. And then a thing that we haven't mentioned that I liked is just the diversity of language in this.
Hmm.
And I like how the Tala Kanil, I don't know how you say this word, but that's what the internet is telling me the people are called. I like how they're speaking Yucatec Maya, which is a Mayan language, in addition to like the French and the Spanish and the Osa.
You suppose they have indoor plumbing down there or just kind of do the fish thing?
I think they just go wherever and then magic it away.
That's fair.
I mean, you saw the water highway thing, like
Outer Wilds highway.
Yeah.
Just get close enough to it that it'll drift away, but not too close, lest you be pulled in.
Yeah. You don't want to get your bum caught in it.
Yeah, there's got to be like ropes somewhere that you can hold on to anchor yourself.
I mean, maybe they even have like smaller scale ones, you know?
It's like a bidet, but just underwater.
And this is a good point. I don't know if we've seen anybody going to the bathroom in the whole MCU so far.
Are we sure about that?
There's got to be some urination poop joke. Yeah.
How often does Tony Stark take a BM? Don't we need to know this?
Is there like, are there any urinal conversations? Like,
great question.
Feels like something that like
Black Widow's in a bathroom at one point. She's not going to the bathroom
when everybody gets dusted and then they come back. What happens to all the the waste that was inside them? Does that come back too?
Yes.
I mean, microbes are people too, Charlie.
Yeah. What? Are you high right now?
Otherwise, when they got dusted, there would just be little piles of shit everywhere. taken away from the drama of the moment.
Witnessing that, you would have nothing to think but that they were turned into a piece of
People can change, Paul.
Used to be.
One thing I forgot to mention, I don't know if I liked it as much as found it odd, but because like the fake Atlanteans are speaking Yucatec Maya, there's a weird part where Namor says his catchphrase in
Maya,
but his catchphrase is Imperius Rex, and that's how it gets translated. And it was a real weird like disconnect for me.
Yeah, I didn't actually understand what was going on there, honestly.
It's his catchphrase, and they needed to put it in. That's pretty much it.
Right.
Okay. Because I was just like, oh, that's kind of out of nowhere.
I forget
watching these movies that they're established characters. I'm sure that's a very common thing, but they don't ever introduce someone who's brand new, who's not from a comic, right? Or does every character, you know, every major character have some kind of equivalent usually?
Yeah, there aren't a lot of canon imports. I think Harley Quinn is the most famous one, where she starts out in the cartoon before being introduced in the comics.
Oh, okay.
Coulson was introduced in the movies before making it over as a comic character, I believe.
That's who I was seeing in my head of like, who doesn't belong?
Paul?
Yeah, a lot of mine have been said because I really like the underwater world. I would have loved to see more of that, more about their infrastructure and all that sort of stuff. I liked a lot of the Riri Williams moments. Like, I kind of like the Riri and Shuri dynamic there too when they're like back at the lab. That was a fun part of the movie for me.
Charlie?
Oh, here's something I thought about. I wonder if this is just like completely in my own head or not. When we had, I think it was the Queen's funeral, and they with all the greenery around it and the black coffin that they were carrying, did anybody get like Spock vibes? I don't know if that was like any sort of reference, like
can't say that I did.
Okay.
I think I got a lot more T'Challa vibes.
Yeah, honestly. No, I get that. Yeah,
I have a follow-up question. At the beginning where, you know, they're doing the funeral stuff and T'Challa's coffin gets, you know, raised up into the hovercraft ship, what happens to it after that?
You know, I wondered that and then decided I didn't care when I was
leaving it open for a sequel.
Okay.
They fire it onto, you know, out into space and it lands on a dead planet.
My God. If they had done like a shot for shot, and I know it's just one shot from like the whatever, Wrath of Khan, that would have been amazing.
I look forward to learning it's some weird Skrull thing in Secret Invasion.
Oh, God.
Charlie, it doesn't get you off the hook. That's not something you liked. That's just you complaining.
That's not me complaining. I didn't mind that.
Yeah, we need to hear you complain about the shields, Charlie.
Actually, one thing I did like about this was, besides Julie Louis-Dreyfus, they didn't really try to tie this into anything else. This is like a standalone movie.
Other than Black Panther.
Well, yeah, but like, just, okay, who's going to be the next Black Panther? But it's not like trying to tee up stuff
except
for later at the expense. Well,
Ironheart. Namor.
No, Namor? I guess.
Namor coming back?
I don't know for sure, but he's a big enough character in the comics that I would be kind of shocked if he never came back.
Well, it doesn't feel like it, is what I'll say. It does not feel like they're doing things in the service of future movies at the expense of this one, which we often get.
Without spoilers, you will love Deadpool and Wolverine.
Okay.
All right, got off the hook for you. Well done. You had to dig deep, but you made it. So ultimately, what'd you think of Black Panther Wakanda Forever? Would you burn the funeral gowns after a year, or would you hold on to that anger and destroy the world? I guess I'm just asking. How many Tolokan sons out of 10 would you give this movie? Let's start with Kevin. I don't think we start with Kevin.
We don't usually. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm just looking at my old scores and deciding where to place this. Even though I spent probably over 50% of my talking time on this episode complaining about stuff, I enjoyed this movie. I mean, with the circumstances, what they were, you know, around the time of the filming, I think they did a very good job of pivoting. And I mean, if not rewriting from scratch, then, you know, rewriting mostly from scratch and still coming up with a very entertaining, if a little overlong, final product. Certainly things that could have been excised, certainly little things that would have changed, but this is definitely a movie that, you know, I could watch again, you know, a week from now and, you know, still enjoy. It's not one of those ones that I say I've watched it, I'm putting this away, and will only watch it to catch up before the inevitable Black Panther 3. I am going to give this, I'm between a 7.5 and an 8. I'm going to give this an 8. That feels about right. I'll give this eight suns out of 10.
I like this movie, but I feel like I don't like it as much as I'm supposed to like it, if that makes sense. Yeah, I don't even know what I mean by that. I think I just mean that, like, it's a good movie. I just wish there wasn't so much of it.
Mm.
It does get a little long. In some ways, it's less like a fun sprint and more like a marathon where, like, I'm enjoying myself and I look at the counter and I'm like, there are still like 50 minutes left. Like, what? I realize 10 minutes of those is credits, but come on, man. So obviously, like Kevin said, you know, given the situation, I think they did more or less the best that they could. I just wish they'd been a little bit more ruthless, I guess, when it came to like cutting stuff and honing stuff down and maybe not including the white people really at all. So it's not a bad movie by any means. I like it a little better than some of the other movies we watched. And that's a long way of saying that this lands to me at 7.5 suns. So I guess the half sun just doesn't work. So it's just, it doesn't light up. But 7.5 suns for me, that feels about right. That's about at the same level as like the original Thor, X-Men First Class, Avengers Age of Ultron. That, you know, that feels about right. So yeah, 7.5 for me.
I feel like I kind of landed similar to Kevin in that I feel like I did a lot of criticizing this time around, but really enjoyed myself overall through pretty much the whole thing. I do think it was bit longer than I would have liked, and there would probably be some easy spots to cut, but I did really like it and it kept my attention through the whole thing, and I think was just pretty effective, pretty enjoyable. So I'm gonna give this 8 suns.
So I didn't really mention it before, but like in detail, but overall the plot and pacing of this movie feel more like I'm actually watching a comic book than almost any of these movies. Like, it just feels like the most comic book nonsense plot.
Yeah, like, what do you mean by that?
I mean, when you boil down the plot, it's you're basically reading a Black Panther story arc where they fight against the Atlanteans, and very little changes from the beginning to the end is the feel, which I think for me is just sort of because I already knew that Chadwick Boseman had passed away. And so, like, the death of Black Panther feels almost outside of this movie to me. And so, like, once things get rolling, it's pretty much just like an excuse to watch the Wakandans and the Atlanteans fight each other, like playing with your action figures kind of thing. Not that that's necessarily a bad thing, but it's just it felt a lot different to me than most of these movies. You know, like you guys said, a very long, like overly long movie. They probably could have tightened it up a bit, but it was more even than the original Black Panther, in my opinion, which I think I had previously said was like 2/3 of one of the best movies you've ever seen, and then 1/3 of just like, yeah. And like, bottom line, I enjoyed it. I had fun. It was cool. And I think I'm going to have to give it eight little miniature suns underwater.
So you liked it a little better than the first Black Panther?
Yeah, I think so, because it was more even this time.
So the big hole in the middle of the movie is just the absence of Chadwick Boseman. And I think it was really, well, smart, and probably the only thing they could reasonably do is just to make the movie about that and to use it instead of just trying to ignore it or push it to the side. I kind of do agree with Doug that, like, yeah, some of the action stuff or some of the middle parts of the movie where it gets away from that and it just like feels like a bunch of battles, maybe doesn't work quite as well. But it's also kind of easy to forget that, like, yeah, the costuming in this is incredible and the music is great and it's got all the things going for it that, or almost all the things going for it that the original Black Panther did too. So I just kind of overlooked that. And then I thought back and I was like, no, it's still on that same level, but it's not as good. It's a little bit saggy. There's stuff that could be cut. I'm going to give it 9 underwater suns out of a potential 10. Just slightly less than Black Panther.
So thanks everyone for joining us on our 80th installment of the Merry Marvel Movie March. At this point, we're actually going to take a bit of a pause because this is the end of Phase 4 of the MCU, and Phase 5, the one they're currently in, has not ended yet. So this is the end of Merry Marvel Movie March Module 2. And since Phase 4 encompasses a bunch of Disney Plus stuff, I'm going to give my quick spoiler-free reviews of the respective Disney Plus shows. We start with WandaVision, which makes sense as a show. The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, that should have been a movie. Season 1 of Loki, kind of on the fence. You know, it makes sense as a show, but I'm kind of thinking at this point it should have been a movie. What If, that's an anthology show, makes sense as a show. Hawkeye, yeah, I'll give you that. That makes sense as a TV show. Moon Knight, makes sense as a TV show. Ms. Marvel, that should have been probably 2 separate movies that were rewritten heavily to not be the storyline that are actually in that movie, because there's too much going on and a lot of it is crazy. She-Hulk Attorney at Law, that should definitely have been a TV show, and other than The Uncanny Valley, is probably my favorite of the Phase 4 MCU shows. And obviously Werewolf at Night and the Guardians Holiday Special, those are one episode specials, they're fine. But taking that into account, how did people think, acknowledging they haven't seen all the Disney Plus stuff or any of it, how do people think Phase 4 of the MCU went? So we're talking here Black Widow to Black Panther Wakanda Forever.
Rudderless. I mean, it's not like we were building to anything. I mean, it would have worked fine in the absence of, you know, the Avengers movies being, you know, huge events. here's another tranche of superhero movies. Enjoy. You know, okay, sure, fine. But if you're, you know, saying like, oh, phase whatever, like they were, you know, they used to build this stuff. We used to be a real country. We used to build things. Like the Avengers. And here it's just like, yeah, here's a bunch of stories. Enjoy.
I sort of agree. I think it would have benefited from some big end of phase event that included a little bit more crossing over. I mean, at this point, present day, we haven't seen Shang-Chi, which was one of the standouts of this phase for me since 2021. And I mean, it was a popular movie. Like, you know, they used to keep the momentum going, keeping these characters showing up in other movies. I mean, even if just the Avengers movies. Rudderless is a really description of this phase. It's almost, when you include the Disney Plus shows, it was like, it's like phase one on steroids. It's just like, here's a new person, here's a new group of people, here's three TV shows you need to watch so you know all of these characters. Like, it's a lot. It's a lot. And having some sort of end point that, you know, even if it wasn't, you know, Kang or whatever you wanted to, you know, whatever relatively minor villain you wanted as a stepping stone towards your big Avengers event at the end of, you know, phases 4, 5, and 6. I think something at the end here to kind of start tying things together would have benefited this phase quite a bit. Even though individual movies, I mean, there were some solid ones, there were some not so solid ones.
I think especially since this started with Black Widow, I'm now starting to see this as the COVID phase. I mean, not all of the movies, I think, were equally affected by that. But I mean, we were even talking about it with the production of this one. I'm like, all right, I think that kind of feels like that, too. It's like, OK, now we're through maybe the worst part of this. Can we move on from here? We'll see.
That would probably be my takeaway, is that it did start. It feels like the COVID phase. Yeah, it feels like a lot of new people introduced. I don't really keep up with any of the shows, so it also feels like there's just, I don't know, it's like a little harder to get excited about than when it felt a little more focused.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with what everyone said. Like, it does feel rudderless. It does, like Paul just said, feel a little unfocused. One of my favorite facts about phase four of the MCU is that when you include the shows, the runtime of phase four is longer than the first three phases combined. And what's also crazy, and this is partly due to COVID, but the entirety of phase four is less than 2 years, you know, from Black Widow in July, like 2021, to Black Panther, like November 2022, like that's less than 2 years. Wow. And that's a lot to get through. And when you don't have like that clear focus of like, where is this stuff going? It starts to feel, with the amount of material that there is and the possibility that some of it may come up in future films. Like we've already seen in like Doctor Strange 2 that like you have to have, well, you don't have to have seen WandaVision, but it helps. That's going to happen a bunch in the next set of movies. It stops being fun and it starts feeling more like homework. And like to the point where I literally, the reason I haven't seen the Marvels yet is because I hadn't watched Ms. Marvel when the movie came out. And I felt like I hadn't done the required reading. So it's a lot. I think somewhat to their credit, Disney kind of recognizes that they did too much too fast. And so that's why they, I think, slowed down a bit on like the Disney Plus shows. But like pre-COVID, if you had asked me, like, was I excited for stuff after Endgame, I would have been like, oh, yeah, like, bring on the next set. And now with all the Disney Plus stuff and everything, like, I think I finally caught the superhero exhaustion that everyone else has been complaining about. So, like, I'll still watch it. I'm still hopeful, but I'm not as excited about it as I was. So that's my two cents. We wanted to thank you all for joining us on the Merry Marvel Movie March episode here. Hope you had a good time. I'm Adam Gobeski.
And I'm Charlie Wallace. A special thanks to our three guests forever. Got Doug Gobeski.
Thank you for having me.
Kevin Vredevogue.
Hey, it's been a blast.
And Paul Wilcox.
It was a pleasure.
It still is a pleasure because you're here forever.
Eternal pleasure. You're not allowed to leave.
That sounds filthy.
We can cut that or leave it.
Is this like Hellraiser now? Is this what I'm going for?
Sooner or later, all movies become Hellraiser.
Well, Paul, I reckon that about wraps it up for another episode of the Gobeski Wallace Report.
Yes, it does, but the fun doesn't have to end here.
No?
No. You can check out our other episodes at GobeskiWallaceReport.com.
Do we have a social media presence as well?
Yes, we do.
I suppose it's probably, what, Twitter and Facebook?
We are on Twitter at GWReport.
I guess that'll have to do for now.
Yep, I guess so.
They sort of made her less the stakes after the queen died. I mean,
yeah, but that's like 2 hours into the
yeah,
movie.
You're, yeah, you're. I was yeah, not really a strong defense, but yeah, no, I like it. Did feel like there was a little shift in the stakes once this whatever global war was on the table. But yeah, no, that was
that's
a waste.
More, that's more than a full Morbius.
Yeah.
Wait, all movies are now measured in Morbiuses.
Wait, hold up. Is this what Morbin time refers to?
Yes. Morbin time is a unit of measure. It is approximately equivalent to 104 minutes, it says.
104.
I always thought of Morbin time as like a state of mind, you know?
That lasts 104 minutes.
Why did you have the runtime of Morbius in front of you? Or is that just like, do you have it written down somewhere? Is that information at your fingertips?
He had to roll up his sleeve to look at the
Kevin, we're recording this on a computer. This is not hard to find.
I just felt like we had just barely brought it up and you were like, I know exactly what information I'm going to need in 3 seconds. Just shot straight to it.
Yeah, Morbius runtime.
I don't know. I remain impressed.
I'm the Memento guy, except I'm having to piece together Morbius. It's not in order.
Don't believe Morbius's lies.